Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Fast Money starts right now, live from the Nasdaq market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lee. Tonight's lineup is Carter Wirth, Steve Grasso, Mark Tepper, and Dan Nathan. Tonight on Fast, the last of the FANG stocks, Alphabet, out with earnings moments ago. That stock down about 2.5% right now. Josh Lipton just spoke to CFO Ruth Porat. He's been monitoring the company conference call and will bring us the very latest headlines. Plus, as the markets have rallied off the lows, the Chartmaster says there is one group of stocks that have come too far, too fast. He'll tell us what to buy instead. But we start off with the rally. The Nasdaq officially exiting a correction as tech stocks are on the run today. The Nasdaq now up 18% from the depths of those December lows. And you'd think it was off to the races, but with Alphabet coming up lame and the bulk of the big tech stocks actually lower since their reports, has this rally been nothing more than a head fake? Dan?
Well, I don't think so. If you go back to the beginning of December, right after the G20, we had this gap opening and there was a lot of enthusiasm about maybe some clarity on some of the massive headwinds that had started the volatility earlier in the summer into the fall. And you think about it, the Nasdaq composite dropped 18% in nearly a straight line in 3 weeks. So we've had this massive V reversal on the way back. All of us, all during the beginning of January, said you really got to wait for earnings. We got to see what sort of visibility they have and how they are positioning for 2019 as it relates to expenses relative to the possible for a deceleration in sales growth. What have we seen in MAGA? Microsoft, Apple, Google,
really,
and Amazon.
Yeah.
Those are really important stocks. They're all $800 billion market cap stocks. They make up at 35% of the NASDAQ 100. What are we seeing? We are seeing them deal with decelerating revenue growth for 2019. So are we likely to see a stall here now that they've all reported earnings and now that they've all run after this V reversal? Yeah. Is it a head fake right now with the NASDAQ up 11%? Let me just tell you, if it's February 4th and you're buying the NASDAQ up 11%, you're kind of doing it wrong. We're going to have an opportunity to buy them lower.
I mean, the ricochet is a function of the preceding sell-off, right? If you were to actually look at all instances where the S&P's moved up more than 10% in 10 sessions or 15% in 20 sessions, almost all of them are predicated on a preceding decline, meaning strength like this doesn't happen at a high, it happens off of a low. And so the real question is the sell-off the primary event and this is the secondary event? And to some extent, you have to say that.
Yes.
It's recovering from the damage done, but the damage was still done. And key stocks, such as, frankly, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, are not performing in line with the market.
So I think their first question was, do you think we're overextended or is it all safe?
Yeah.
Basically paraphrasing. I do think that we're overextended. I think it was a positioning issue. So everything that these guys just said, we were so oversold on that level in December. We rebounded. There's a lot of those mega or mega tech names that drove us down are lifting us up. And they eventually will run out of gas and we're going to see the market turn around and flatten out and then roll over.
So when you look at the macro landscape, I mean, we're in a period of time right now where economic growth is decelerating. We're seeing inflation slowing. And typically when that happens and you backtest the different sectors, tech is actually one of the worst performing sectors. So I do think with the Powell pause in play right now, I do think that inflation will start to tick up over the course of the next few months. And I think we're going to see some better results out of tech over the course of the next quarter or so.
I think it's fair to say that Amazon down 3.5% on Friday after those results is a rounding error. When you consider where the stock has been in the last year, what they reported, I mean, anybody can pick. Listen, Google, the way it's trading right now, or Alphabet, it's really trading like a rounding error. It's, to me, there was nothing in any of these results that said you have to run for the hills and you have to sell them. What you really are dealing now is with the fact that those stocks made up such a disproportionate amount of the positive performance over the last few years. And now, as we see this deceleration in sales and the potential for these headwinds to remain in 2019, you're saying to yourself, do I have to go in and buy them now?
Well,
I will
tell you, the thing that would make me change my mind, because I do believe that we're all on the same sort of page right
now. You sound a little more constructive, Mark.
Yeah, I would say, yeah. I mean,
I would say, though, that the Powell pause, for me, if Powell comes straight out now and ends QT instead of dancing around that topic, I would assume that that would give me the all clear.
He's because not going to do that. You think he's going to do
He danced around it. No. I don't think he's going to do it. Okay. So that's why I'm still hanging on.
So you're saying I'm not going to get the all clear.
I'm not going to get the all clear. I think what everyone has factored in, though.
But you think the pausing is really all clear? Because it's really, if he doesn't go anymore, it's a different set of problems, right?
I totally agree. I'm still negative on the market. So we sat here during that Christmas week, and I said that I thought we were going to see a rally of 10%. We overshot that level. We're still below the 200-day moving average in the S&P cash. I still believe that where it was just positioning at this point, guys are now 100% where they should be. They're long. So I do believe that you're going to see the last gasp, China trade. When that deal gets done, you might have a day or two or three, the market rolls over on that.
So I think you're going to see tech continue to underperform relative to the S&P for probably the first half of the year. And then I think by the second half, tech is going to regain its leadership. And I actually expect tech to be the best performing sector in the S&P 500
this
year.
Do you like cyclicals like semis within tech?
Prefer software.
Software.
Yeah, I think software.
Do you like growth versus value?
Yeah, I think software is where it's at. I mean, we're looking at higher margins there. We specifically like the companies that are realizing recurring revenues. So you look at a company like Salesforce. All recurring revenue. They've got clients and customers that are investing heavily to get their platform off the ground. So it's tough to leave them in the event of a recession. And, you know, quite frankly, that's one of the last things businesses are going to cut.
And governments. I mean, listen, it's a really important point. I mean, obviously, there's a massive secular shift going on in that area. But when you think about the totality of those market caps, it's going to be really hard if they continue to outperform and you don't have the mega caps, the MAGAs doing it too. I just think it's really important to remember that, you know, we have seen rotations over the last couple of years and the market's really gone nowhere. I think you really got to focus on the banks. Our friend Peter Buchvar in a note this morning highlighted European bank stocks, and it's really important. The SX7E is down almost 40% from year ago highs. So we're talking about the Fed pause here. We're talking about maybe a government shutdown deal. We're talking about some of these things that are very much focused on here. The headwinds, though, that we're seeing in Europe, the European banks are telling you something. And let me tell you what has not rallied over the last couple of weeks since they reported. JP Morgan, it's basically flat.
US
banks have really stalled here, and I think that
we'll just think about what we were just saying before. If the Powell pause, when Carter just said it's a whole host of other problems, now you're going to have the growth issues going forward. So I think that you're going to have, when you come out of that China trade deal, that's going to be a negative for China. That's going to be a negative for the U.S. That's going to be a negative for everyone, because by the essence of the deal, China's growth is going to come in further. That's not going to increase China's growth, right? Tariffs are still going to stay in place to keep their good word on it. But if they've been taking us or raking us over the coals.
What kind of deal are you thinking of, though?
People
are thinking of a deal and tariffs get suspended, or at least they won't be ratcheted up. So how is China growth going to be further
impaired? So they have to give something, right? They have to give something back because Trump wants a good deal. So it's by its essence, they're giving something up.
So not forcing technology transfer is a deal.
The deal priced in. Let's say there is a deal. We could have already priced that in by the 19% move in the Russell.
That's also
when do you think
case?
A deal is going to happen this year?
So they're going to have a deal done in the next month.
You don't think they're
going
punt.
To have? They're going to have something done. If they don't have something done, the market sells off. If they get something done, that crimps global growth even further. So everyone thinks this is the magic pill. It's not the magic pill, and you're sort of checking these boxes that global growth is actually starting to
so
be
it's
stemmed
damned
even
if
further.
You do, damned if you don't in terms of the market.
I do feel that way,
and I
feel like everyone was so damn positioned for this, was not positioned for the sell-off, that they're ratcheting back up now, and that's why you're seeing all those names.
And I think it could make the case, though, why if you literally have more than a six-month time horizon that, you know, the crash that we saw, and it was a crash for all intents and purposes from the highs in September in the S&P 500 down to the Christmas Eve massacre, you know, if you're a dollar-cost averager, you're going to have opportunities like that to buy some of these names and secular sort of, you know, like moves like your CRMs and that sort of thing, and that's the way you're going to have to trade. Because if you look at since the start of 2018, we've had some peaks and troughs. We've had some retests of some, you know, big dramatic moves. We may get another one. I just don't think there's any opportunity right now to say it's done. The coast is clear.
Right. It's all about the cycle. The cycles have led off the lows because they led on the way down, and we've expended a lot of energy. So if you have latent potential, then you have exploitation potential. How much of the potential that existed at the lows in December has been exploited? A great deal, if not all.
What scenario, Grasso, do you see in which the markets would go higher then? If a China trade deal is not going to send the markets higher?
As I said before, I think it revolves around the Fed. I think you're going to have to, because right now, the Fed is not neutral. The Fed with the Fed funds rate minus CPI, you're still positive there. They're still tightening. If he still continues QT, even if this year they slow it down, right? He's still burning through $400 billion this year.
That's negative for the market.
Negative for the market.
So
if he stops QT, that's where I get positive.
The most likely of all scenarios when it comes to the Fed as well as China, the market goes down. That's where you're trading.
The market goes down, and this is a whiplash effect that everyone was enamored with the headline. The Fed is on hold. People have factored in now that the Fed is doing nothing for 2019 and that they're slowing down QT immediately, which is an error on their part.
Just quickly, you agree?
Yeah, I do agree. And I just think the biggest, the most dangerous thing is that if there is some external event, look where Fed funds were, look where we took a pause here. You know, I go back to saying this. Remember, we dreamed up all the twist and this and that and 11, 12, 13. Can you imagine the acronyms that they're going to have to come up to support our economy if we do have some sort of event that emanates from Europe or China?
All right, let's get a quick check on shares of Alphabet. They're down more than 3% after earnings. Carter, why don't you head on over to the Plasma? Let's get some instant analysis on the stock.
Right. So, you know, it's almost identical to what Amazon did, frankly, what Microsoft did. And this is the issue for the market. You need these big names to perform for the market truly to press higher. So is it a non-event? In a way, it is. And it's not so much how much it's down. It's the fact that it's not up. Amazon, if things were good, should have been up, so to speak. Microsoft, Google. Anyway, let's look at a few charts and see if we can put it all together. So the lines kind of were waiting for this in a way. You know, Google has been up against this. This is, and it's going to fail here, right? It's going to hit that and move back down. Now, again, it's not a big deal, but I would point out also something. Right here, which you can barely see, if I zoom in here, there is a unfilled gap right there. You just see it. There have been about 16 gaps in the past 12 months. It's the only unfilled gap. And that's actually kind of where the stock is indicated in the morning, which is a very interesting thing. Unfilled gaps are very real. So here is the tell maybe as to not only did Google come up to this line and is failing, but as it was advancing, and this is really the issue, off of the lows, it's been underperforming the market. And now, of course, the facts are out. Earnings were not good enough.
All right. Thanks for that, Carter. Why don't you come on back over? We should let Carter come.
Yeah, we should
right?
probably.
Yeah. He should. All right, this is a seat.
I mean, theoretically.
So Google, I agree with him. Google has been trading. It's been fighting its 200-day moving average, which is roughly 1127 since back in October. It's had a couple of run at it during this volatile period that we've had. It's stalled. Today was the day where it was up most of the day above that 200-day moving average. It got rejected again at the end of the day, and we see what the stock is telling us right now. I think I agree most with that declining trend line. For me, you sell Google. Google has those expenses, content costs, YouTube, what it's costing to drive more traffic through them. I don't think they're beyond GDPR yet, and you're going to have to literally sign off on it to release your data. And I think that's a major headwind still.
Mark, quick take on Alphabet.
Love it long term. There's one number that they obviously can't publish because I think it comes from the advertisers, and that is cost per qualified lead. From the advertiser's perspective, and I think that cost is lowest with Google because they really do have the best digital advertising platform out there.
All right, we'll have much more on Alphabet earnings throughout this hour as the conference call is underway. Plus, Gilead volatile after hours. Biotech stocks have been breaking out over the last month, but is the boom about to go bust? Plus, it is the $245 billion question. What should Apple buy with all that cash? The traders will play matchmaker. And after a strong start to the year, the chart master says a rally in one group of stocks is about to stop dead in its tracks. He will tell us what that is. We are live from Times Square in New York City. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Gilead falling after reporting earnings moments ago. It's down 3.5%. Let's get to Seema Modi back at headquarters with the details. Hey, Seema.
Hey, Melissa. Mixed reaction on Wall Street to Gilead's report. Jeffrey saying that the stock had some higher expectations going into today's report, given how management has talked up the business over the last few months. Though analysts there still expect the stock to bounce in the longer term. RBC Capital staying bullish, reiterating their outperform rating on Gilead, a $70 price target. target, citing the strength Gilead is seeing in its HIV franchise, which is continuing to help drive product sales above consensus. And Melissa, that's a key question for Gilead Sciences longer term, if strength in its HIV drug franchise can offset the decline in its flagship hepatitis C drugs. Shares are down about 3.5% after hours, but a longer-term chart will show you that it is down about 15% in the past 1 year. Melissa, back to you.
All right. Seema, thanks. Seema Modi back at headquarters. Mark, what do you like about Gilead or not like?
Oh, I don't like much at all. So, oh. Unfortunately, sales have been declining since 2015. I think a lot of people were expecting 2018 to hopefully for Gilead be a trough, but that's probably not the case. Hepatitis market is declining. Their HIV franchise might be peaking. What they really need to do is they need to transition more towards cancer and diabetes. They have a new CEO in place who could help them with that transition, but I think that's really where the future is in biotech.
And I think that new CEO is running out of momentum. That was announced in December. Stock's running
already?
Out of momentum.
Oh,
no.
Stock is.
Yeah,
not him. CEO. I was like, he just started.
I don't know. I haven't checked him. I don't know. Maybe he's got to go for a physical. But when you look at IBB, I always choose to invest in IBB over the individual stocks. IBB slammed from October to December, down 27%, up 14% year to date, outperforms the majors. I would stick with the IBB versus buying the stock-specific name.
And then XBI, which through the big run-up outperformed the IBB because it's more weighted towards the smaller ones, then is underperformed. If you really want to embrace this as a theme, you want to go with the smaller, higher beta names.
Yeah, it's interesting about the XBI. It topped out at 100, went down to 65. Yep. I mean, to see a weighted index or an ETF move like that in such a short period of time, now back at $85, it looks like it's at massive resistance. And so, we've seen some acquisitions over the last 6 months. It just doesn't seem we're in that sort of environment, especially in a very speculative space where we're likely to see more right now. So to me, I would be shocked to see XBI meaningfully make a run at what was a huge double top at $100.
You know, it's a bigger macro theme as well. Another headwind for this space is we talked about drug pricing. That has always been a headwind for this space. It's a bipartisan headwind. And now with the Democrats running the House, we saw today the stock buybacks coming out in full force against that. Does it really go anyplace? Probably not. But now when you start to talk drug pricing, that's truly a Democrat and a Republican source of contention for these corporations. Maybe that rears its ugly head again and is another headwind for the entire
space. Just remember when the group topped out in 2016, it was when Hillary started talking about it, and that was just a nasty, nasty one-year bloodbath.
All right, coming up, check out Alphabet sinking after its earnings report. The conference call is underway. We'll bring you the very latest. Plus, small caps leading the market this year, up 12%. But Carter here, who called the rally, by the way, in late December, says group has come too far too fast. He'll explain. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC. First in business worldwide, much more fast still ahead.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Ready, set, rally. Markets on a tear this year with the S&P 500 up more than 10% in just the last few weeks. Our Bob Pisani is down at the NYSE with more on this rally. Hey, Bob.
It's very impressive, Melissa. The market is in a slow melt-up that's leaving it, I think, vulnerable to overvaluation. The market internals have been just outstanding recently, many more advancing than declining stocks for several weeks. Buying interest is higher, selling pressure is lower, and volatility, the VIX has collapsed. It's at a four-month low. The problem, as I see it, is valuation. Where are you on the 2019 earnings debate? That's all that matters right now. Strategists are divided between those who believe we are heading for an earnings recession, two straight quarters of negative earnings growth, and those who think we'll avoid that. This is not a trivial question. The last time we saw two consecutive quarters or more of declining earnings was in 2015 and 2016. Not surprise, the S&P was down 0.7% in 2015. That was the only down year between 2009 and 2017. Got your attention now? So right now, first quarter earnings are down to a measly 0.5% growth estimate, with full year estimates now down at 4.8%. half what it was 4 or 5 months ago. So if you're in that camp that believes the market will see only, for example, 4% earnings growth, the consensus right now, then the S&P is currently selling for a 16.1 multiple. That's a bit pricey for such low earnings growth. But if you think there will be zero earnings growth, then the S&P is trading at a multiple of almost 17. That is really pricey for no earnings growth, considering the historic average is closer to 15 or 16, with typical earnings growth of 5 or 6%. Now, an additional issue is emerging as well. The revenues are strong, 6, 7% in Q1, but earnings are going to zero. This implies that margins are under pressure, likely from higher costs associated with wages and material costs. It's another reason to be a bit cautious. Back to you, Melissa.
All right. Thank you, Bob. Bob Pisani. So who's in the camp of 0% revenue growth? Because that, as Bob had mentioned, really shifts how you think about PEs in this market.
Yeah, it does. I mean, we need to see the top line growth. If we don't see it, then you start actually pricing in what we think have been the adverse effects of all these global headwinds. We're talking about lower growth. So here's the thing. You know, we talk about all the mega caps. I know we're going to talk about some smaller caps.
Like mega caps.
Yeah. Okay. Think about what is the most economically sensitive thing, despite the secular shift towards online advertising. Advertising. We haven't seen an earnings recession yet. We haven't seen a recession. People don't think that we can see the top line go down in Facebook or Amazon or Google. It's likely to happen sometimes.
The real irony is that you know, Wall Street in general holds out these models as being so efficient. And this is my DCF model. This is my enterprise value to EBITDA. And yet there's been no change to earnings. And yet there was an earnings multiple collapse. And now we've had a re-rating of multiples. What is something worth? You know what it's worth? It's where it closes on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange in any given day. And it moves around so much that everything else is conversation. So is this just another chance to fade after a sell-off and a ricochet? Or is something changed? The key issue is it's all about sentiment as much as ever before.
I think we've seen a lot of very conservative guidance out of a lot of companies. I've heard government shutdown being mentioned quite a bit, maybe not as much anymore, but I mean, that was like a significant portion of the earnings calls early on. I've also heard, trade. And now I think that, you know, if we can get some sort of trade resolution, I don't know that we're going to have a comprehensive trade package, but if we can get some sort of resolution, Powell stays put, I do think we're going to see better top line growth and better earnings growth than is being priced in right now.
I think it's what Bob had said. You know, you're paying a high premium on EPS that has just been declining. This has all been 100% PE expansion. So if you believe, as you said, that the China trade deal, if that winds up resulting in companies exploding with CapEx, then you want to be a buyer of the market. If you don't believe that that's going to happen, then we're paying a premium for earnings that just aren't there.
Right. Small caps actually beating the markets this year. And Carter, call the rally back in December.
Every single time that we have come down and gotten this low, what's happened is that small caps have outperformed. And we are at that critical juncture yet again. You can see it. And what has happened here is this. Is this, and I'm going to make the bet that that is going to happen again, that we are going to actually have a double bottom on this, and we're going to have a major multi-point bottom on the percentage above or below.
Well, the IWM is up around 14% since then, but Carter says the rally has gotten ahead of itself, so why don't you head on over to the plasma and break it down.
It is a little steep, and remember, this is just getting into what's known as the January effect, that typically small-cap stocks, if you subscribe to that kind of thing, will outperform, having been pressured at the end of the year. So it was a good year for January effect as a concept, but let's try to parse it out from here. SPY, IWM. I think the key is that, of course, you overshoot, that's the nature of beta to the upside, the Russell, and you undershoot, right? So cyclicality, smaller cap, lower quality in principle, the overshoot, the undershoot, they look the same, but what we really know is from the absolute low, from Christmas Eve, you've got the market, S&P up 16.1, and you've got the Russell up almost 20. And adjusted for beta, it's kind of what you might expect. But what's starting to happen here of late is an issue that I think can't be ignored. Here's the chart of the Russell. Obviously, it's a big move. And essentially, it's a little better than 50% back from the preceding sell-off. But as the rally continued over the past 2 to 3 weeks, watch what's happening on a relative basis. So
this is the interesting thing. Over the last leg of the rally, relative performance to the SPY has started to stall. And not only has it started to stall, look exactly where it has stalled. It has stalled up against the relative downtrend line to the penny. I think this is an issue. I think the small cap move, as good as it has been, is likely at an end.
All right, so fade the small cap rally.
You know, when I think of small caps, I think of like a group that's pretty prominent in there, and it's energy. And I look at like the XOP, it's the S&P oil and gas ETF, and I look at the damage that was done. It literally got cut in half nearly in the last 6 months. And the bounce off the bottom is just bad. It's just not good. It's up maybe 25% after being down 50%. So to me, I kind of like to put those two things together here, and I just don't see it for that group, especially Russell looks like it really hit some technical resistance.
And it's also heavy in financials, right? That's part of the issue. Financials have ricocheted so much, which has lent part of the initial torque off the low. But now it's starting to stall, and that is a problem.
Crude's starting to stall, too. So you see crude flattening out as well. But when you brought up before, if your time horizon is longer than 6 months, you look at the XLE. So the XLE is up 11 or 12% year to date. You talk about energy, but look at it over 5 years. It's done nothing. It's down still 2%. Depending on how you look at it on a relative basis, it's down still 2%. So these are names where, yes, you could make that big bang for your buck. But as Carter said, if it's rolling over, these energy names get hit hard.
Small caps were deeply oversold in mid-December. They're borderline overbought right now. We saw a lot of small cap outperformance against the S&P 500 for about the first week of January. I think it's already stalled out. And when we look at the potential for higher wages over the course of the next year or so, we look at these companies have very high debt levels. We would expect that there's going to be underperformance in small caps the remainder of the year.
All right, let's get a check on our earnings mover as we head to break. Alphabet right now is down just about 3%. The conference call is wrapping up. We'll bring you all the latest headlines. Plus, Apple matchmaker J.P. Morgan out with a list of companies it says could get swooned by the tech giant. The traders will tell you if they agree. Much more fast still ahead.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Alphabet. The stock is lower in the after-hour session despite beating expectations. Let's get to Josh Lipton in San Francisco with the very latest from the conference call. Hey, Josh.
So, Matt, one focus on the call is clearly Google's capital expenditures. You saw CapEx just shooting higher in the quarter to about $6.8 billion. That was higher than the street was looking for. Here's CFO Ruth Porat talking about that on the call. Take a listen.
With respect to CapEx, we continue to invest in both compute requirements and for office facilities, although we expect the CapEx growth rate in 2019 to moderate quite significantly.
CEO Sundar Pichai was also on the call with more color about those investments. New and expanded office space he talked about. Of course, you guys have that new campus there in NYC. Talked about data center construction and expansion. Called that an important long-term expansion. Also did give some color about different business units and segments. Talked about YouTube. Said the number of YouTube channels with more than 1 million subscribers nearly doubled in the last year. Said the number of creators earning five or six figures grew by more than 40% year over year, but no big dramatic breakout of YouTube, the kind that we know some on the street would like to see. Same kind of goes for the cloud business. Sundar Pichai saying it's fast growing, said it was a multi-billion dollar business, said last year they more than doubled the number of Google Cloud platform deals over 1 million. But no, again, no revenue run rate breaking out there, even though analysts did press him on more stats and facts there, though Porat calling it one of the company's fastest growing businesses. Of course, we know that business also has a new chief. Remember Thomas Kurian coming over from Oracle. He's taken over that business from Diane Greene. Mel, back to you.
All right, Josh, thanks. Josh Lipton in San Francisco. For more on Alphabet earnings, let's bring in Fast Money friend and Loop Ventures founder Gene Munster on the Fast Line. Gene, what do you make of the results? I mean, it's interesting because it seems like for a lot of these big cap tech companies, it's all about spending. If they're spending more than what investors expect, that really seems to put a damper on the movement of the stock.
Yeah, Melissa, this call had a subtle tone of confusion from analysts that I can't really recall from other calls, but it was to your exact point. It was related to expenses. So essentially, there's a mixed message coming from the company. On one side, you have them saying that they're going to spend more on cloud hardware, traffic acquisition, as mobile, which carries a higher cost of acquisition, becomes the growth driver. And so that's a negative, and that's investing more. On the other side, to Josh's point and some of the soundbite that he had, is they expect CapEx and hiring growth rate to materially slow this year, which is positive for earnings. And so I think it's been this, there have been a few analysts have asked, just trying to get some clarity, and the company keeps reiterating these two points. I suspect the bottom line is this, investors don't like hearing about investment because we're in a period where investors like profitability, but those investments are really important for the long term. So I think that the net of this quarter was very positive.
Hey, Gene, it's Dan. You know, last year, obviously, when Facebook told us that they are going to be spending more for a whole host of reasons, obviously, earnings expectations for 19 got destroyed, and so did the stock. Here I'm looking at Google now, and it was one that we used to say on a peg basis, a PE to growth, looked pretty fair, even at about 20 times. Now earnings estimates are coming down for 2019 in mid-single digits, and the stock's trading 24 times. Is this when we kind of lose that PE to growth for Google in the near term, or Alphabet?
I don't think so. I think this is going to generally stay in favor, in part because of the stability around this business. I just want to emphasize that. And that's different than some of the uncertainty around where Facebook's revenue growth ultimately is going to be or what Amazon's investment cycle looks like. So Google grew 22%. That's the same growth rate they've had over the past 3 years. Really incredible to see that kind of stability. Now, there's going to be some wavering in that growth rate based on timing of new products that they talked about. But I think the key is this, is Google is the oxygen of the Internet. We cannot live without it. And I think if you look at things like Facebook and Netflix, we potentially could live. There's other kind of services that we could supplement for those. So I think that, in this case, this is a kind of a different type of conclusion here. And I think the conclusion is pretty straightforward, is that Google is going to be a long-term winner. They have an AI-first approach, which will make their products better and be positive for revenue growth for the long term.
I get what you're saying, Gene, but I mean, on a multiple basis, it doesn't trade like it's the must-have thing going forward. I mean, if you're saying we can do without Facebook and Netflix, they have a much higher multiple. How do we think about Alphabet, and when does that premium get into the stock if you really say that, you know, it's the lifeblood of the Internet?
So there's a little bit of effect where they're just not getting the proper credit. I think Apple is probably the best example of not getting credit. I think Google is probably the second best example. And it's always hard to predict when investors will fully realize and appreciate that. I think that if you look at the roadmap of how investors generally think, there's some skittishness about expenses, but they also want to see revenue growth. So simply to answer your question is, what could get this multiple to re-rate higher? unfortunately, it probably needs to come from some other event in their other bets. What's going on with Waymo or Verily, their kind of their healthcare initiatives. I think those type of things, and just to kind of put Waymo in a perspective, is I'm not endorsing these numbers, but some analysts think that that business could be worth $100 to $150 billion. So if you take the high end of that, that could add 20% to Google's overall business here. And so these are massive opportunities that the company has longer term, and I think as investors have a hint that there's something exciting around the story in terms of revenue growth, that should be positive for the multiple.
What's your grade on the quarter, Gene?
So we're giving it a B plus, and I think that revenue growth continues to be favorable. Expenses, some confusion, but this is the oxygen of the internet, and it's one that investors should own.
All right, Gene, thanks so much for phoning in with your analysis. We appreciate it. It's always good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Gene Munster of Loop Ventures. I feel like we go through this with a lot of these names. They say that they're going to spend more, and then the stock goes lower. We saw that with Amazon. We saw Facebook have the opposite reaction because they had a handle on expenses.
Right. So if mobile is their growth strategy and the margins are going to be smaller in mobile, then that's the first problem. CapEx, and when Gene said that they're the oxygen, there's a couple of players that are stealing the oxygen from them. So
Research?
It's Facebook and it's Amazon. No, ads.
Okay.
So now it's Facebook, it's Amazon. So there's a lot of people where they used to be the only guy at the table or the gorilla in the room. Now there's a couple of other gorillas in the room that are stealing oxygen from them. So I would wait till a little bit of this smoke clears. Waymo is not enough of a driver right now. That could be the one, as he said, to re-rate the multiple.
I mean, look, there are things that are, in a way, timely at any given moment in the market, and there are things that are maybe dull. Frankly, the stock is dull here. It's had a recovery. It's not indicated well tomorrow, nor is it indicated that poorly. The truth is, it probably belongs here. Sometimes stocks are fairly priced. I think that's the case with Goog.
I mean, it has been dull for a while.
It has, yeah, but I still think it is a great long-term stock. I still think it is the biggest gorilla in the room when it comes to digital advertising. As a business owner myself, I've tried Facebook. I've tried some of these other platforms, and just none of them are as effective as Google's. I mean, you can spam people in their Facebook news feed, or you can actually get qualified people to come to you through Google. So, you know, I think when it all boils down to how effective the company is, I think they're just head and shoulders better than their peers.
Well, I think the bigger thing relative to its peers is that it's very diversified, specifically to Facebook. You know, they have about seven platforms that with like over a billion users. Now, obviously, a lot of that is based on selling ads, but there's a lot of other drivers there. We're not going to know what Waymo means for this valuation for a very long time, but I think it's one of those reasons. People didn't like the other bets. Remember that? Like 5 years ago, it was kind of in the box for that sort of thing. Well, now they have another bet that is the size of many Fortune 100 companies, at least in market value within it. So to me, I think that, again, if you have a longer term time horizon, it's likely you're going to see the stock back at 1,000 sometime in 2019, but it's likely to be higher in a few years.
All right, here's a question. If you had $245 billion, what would you do with it? That's probably a question Tim Cook asks himself, except that he's actually got the money. One top Wall Street analyst is helping with some possible answers. That is next. Also ahead, a handful of media companies set to move big time after they report this week. The lineup and the trade coming up on Fast Money, live from the Nasdaq in Times Square. Welcome back to Fast Money. It is a $245 billion question. Who should Apple buy? JP Morgan out with a note today, creating a short list of potential candidates, including gaming company Activision Blizzard, streaming giant Netflix, and speaker company Sonos. But you know, here at Fast Money, we love our game. So we thought we'd make a couple of matches of our own and play a little matchmaker. So we ask, who should Apple buy? Dan.
Yeah, this is kind of an easy one. I know that people like to think of this $100+ billion acquisition the company should do. I don't think they're ever going to do something like that. But to me, SiriusXM would be one that they should really look at. It's a $26 billion market cap. They just closed their deal to buy Pandora. XMSR or Sirius has 34 million streaming subs. They're in cars. We know that's a place that Apple would like to be. Pandora has 70 million monthly active users. And this is a company, Apple, that just told us they have 50 million paid subscribers for Apple Music on a $900 million iOS base. I think that should be much higher. I think they should get into streaming. They have not been successful at it. So to me, I use the XMSR app. I think it's amazing streaming content, and I think it should be part of the Apple ecosystem. One last thing, $6.5 billion in sales annually, XMSR. You know, Apple's services is going to be a $40 billion or so. That would be a substantial part of that. And they're also competing with Amazon, who we know is going hard. They have about 100 million Prime subscribers. They got to start bundling other services. Apple Prime.
It's a nifty pick. And it wouldn't be spending any money compared, what is it, $26 billion or something? You'd just be getting started with the cash.
But I wonder, when you think of Apple buying something, they want to buy something sexy. I don't know if it hits the sexy
was
bill.
Was Beats sexy? I think
because they wanted that niche little play for them. And I think it was, when you look at Siri, it sort of feels like it that's run out of gas. Where I agree with you. I love the product. I think the app is great. I think the home is great. But when you look at Apple, I think they have to really make a splash for them to do something. I like both stocks, but I don't think they do.
Well, then, Grasso, who would you say?
Well, you have to look at what, Dan was talking about, increasing services. So you want that $37 billion, I love the song, that $37 billion revenue from services. You want to increase that. So you got to go services. And for me, I'm still long Square. Square is not just a payment processor. It's a whole host of services. They don't touch the small consumer, Apple, as much as they should in this venue. So they have a big splash everywhere else. I think they should incorporate this in their ecosystem, Square.
Are there businesses
we
that
Apple
would
not want to be? We know that Grasso loves Square. He loves Square.
Right. But
with
should
a
Apple
hat size,
love Square?
And I give him credit for that. I just see that's just a big mess. I mean, it's not something that
food
Apple
delivery,
really
loans,
wants.
To. I mean,
they just
are these
don't
want to
be there.
Want?
They don't want to be
just
there. They're doing a lot of amazing things. And they're going to get bought.
Square Cash, Apple Pay, the whole thing fits. The whole product, the guy who designed the Square point of sale was a former Apple employee. So this is something where I'm not sure either. By the way, but I think that it would make sense. Or if I was sure, I wouldn't be here tonight. I'd just be loading up on more Square.
Carter, what's your
Well, pick? I talk about sex appeal. We'd be spending the most money. Tesla, of course. So if the idea is to further penetrate into your user base and their lives, you spoke about cars. Seriously, this meets all of those objectives. Also be soaking up a little bit more cash. All the other things we're talking about are 20 or 30 billion. This is in the 50s at least. Maybe you pay 90 for it. I would say Tesla.
You like Tesla?
No.
You? Oh,
no,
you don't. You
no,
don't,
I don't like
really
Tesla at all.
That's right.
Unfortunately,
you like it. You like it if Apple acquires.
Yeah, maybe a little more stability that way. No, not a big fan of Tesla at all. Apple seems like they're kind of getting away from the autonomous driving, so I don't really know where Tesla fits in. And it's just very, very expensive.
Well, they have the technology and they have all the miles driven.
Well, let me tell you something.
Really
I know that it's been kicked around for a long time. I just don't think it's a dumb idea whatsoever. When you think about it, Elon Musk is considered this technology innovator.
Carter's thought's not a dumb idea.
No.
Thank you.
He was basically saying, but let me tell you something.
You got Larry Ellison in there.
You know what Steve Jobs credited Tim Cook for doing is building out the supply chain and building out this huge manufacturing sort of thing. And I think Tesla could probably use the help. They're building Model 3 intense just a few months ago, and really their opportunity is to go mass market in China. You know who knows how to go mass market in China? Tim Cook does. All the issues about their balance sheet and stuff like that would be assuaged. Yeah. So to me, I think ultimately Tesla is going to have to license their software. They're going to license what's good about whatever they're doing there. It's not going to be an auto company, and I could see that Apple doing that.
All right, Mark, what's your pick for Apple?
So I like Activision Blizzard. I mean, gaming and esports is just growing at a rapid rate. Esports viewership is up 40% year over year. The Super Bowl had terrible ratings yesterday. Viewership in all major league sports is down except for Major League Baseball, which is up 1% year over year. Super Bowl champion Robert Kraft owns an esport team. Shaq owns an esport team. A-Rod owns an esport team. It is a legitimate league. So when you look at what causes people to upgrade products, when it comes to PCs, better video games, when it comes to going from a PlayStation 3 to a PlayStation 4, better video games, going from an iPhone 10 to the 11 to the 12 to the 13, better video games. So I like Activision.
It's also content potentially for a streaming service for Apple, right?
All right, I've been a little chatty here. I'm going to be really quick. I mean, listen, Apple,
you hate it?
Apple's devices
that's all you have
really
to say?
They're not known for gaming. It's not the sort of stuff
that
you
right.
want.
That's true.
Okay. And the other point is they're not good at content. I mean, look how far behind they are almost all of their competitors in this thing. So to me, I don't like it.
How about you?
Well, I think it would be if you really jot it out and whiteboard it. You have Apple TV. My kids play on Apple TV, but nowhere near what they play Fortnite, nowhere near what they play Call of Duty. So there's a lot of little things where you think it could work. But I feel like the gaming stocks are in decline right now. I feel like they can't get out of their own way. I feel like they have digital competition.
And they're candidates for acquisitions.
So maybe.
It's on sale, 50% off.
Maybe. True. Yeah. Square's 30% off. Cha-ching. And we're back.
Yep. All right, coming up, lights, camera, media earnings, Twitter, Snap, Disney, Viacom, and Electronic Arts all on deck this week. We'll tell you how to trade them next. First, check out the Cramer Cam tonight. Jim has got the CEO of Clorox, Ben Odorer, after that company reported solid numbers this morning and the stock soared. You can check out that interview. Top of the hour, 6 p.m. Eastern on Mad Money. We are live at the Nasdaq in Times Square. Much more Fast Money just 2 minutes away. Welcome back to Fast Money. Disney set to report earnings after the bell tomorrow. So what should investors expect? Dan's over at the Plasma with the options action. Dan.
Yeah, hey, Mel. So surprisingly, the options market is only implying about a 2.5% move in either direction on Wednesday following Disney's results. But on average, the stock has only moved about 1.7% over the last four quarters. Call volume is two times that of puts today. But just a little disclaimer here, it looked like there was a lot of people closing out of calls above the market here in March. So not exactly a bullish or bearish endorsement from what I could tell. The chart setup is really interesting here. You know, the 1 year, it's been in about a 20-point range. It's kind of like right at the midpoint here at about 111 here. So it's really been consolidating. But what I found really interesting about it was look at the 5-year. I mean, I'm going to do my best Carter Worth here. Look at this thing right here. Obviously, since its 2015 highs, it's been in this kind of wedge, I guess you would call it, a series of higher lows, but a series of lower highs. And it broke out last year above that. You take out the December massacre here, and maybe you have a little support or long-term support at 110, a beat and raise, and you could have this thing on its way back up near 122. That was its all-time high in 2015.
Some fine-looking lines you got there. And the line from the peak at 122 was the Star Wars. The stock ultimately is headed back there.
All right. Thanks for the action, Dan. For more options action, check out the full show Fridays, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Final trades up next. Time for the final trade. Carter.
Small caps have come a long way. I'd take profits and or short.
Steve Grasso.
XLV, there was a defensive nature to this last year. So if the mega cap or MAGA, as Dan's on the desk, starts to peter out, you might see that defensive nature come back. XLV.
Mark Tepper.
Sell Tesla. Model S and X test drives are down 50% year over year. Sell Tesla.
Dan Nathan.
Yeah, generally it's not a great idea just to randomly buy stocks for a takeout. And that's really not why I would say to buy Sirius, because maybe Apple would buy them. But I think it's well set up with the combination of Pandora here. So I like Sirius.
All right, that does it for us. See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast Money. Meantime, don't go anywhere. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.